with Stuart Pink and Mark Searby.
Film reviews and movie news.
Yes, it is. It's film reviews and movie news with me, Stuart Pink, and some say he is the jewel of the Nile. It's Mark Searby.
Oh, that's very kind of you to say. That's very kind.
Oh.
Yes, yes.
And I know I've discovered you yet. You're still...
Oh, right. Yeah, Nile, still waiting. Still waiting to be discovered. Yes, yes. Hey, give it time. You know, yeah. These things don't come
put there by some ancient emperor.
discarded like a used tissue. Just thrown away.
You know. Lobbed in the river. Yeah.
Yes.
What way
yes.
to go?
Oh, dear.
How are you?
Yes, gleaming. I'm not too bad. Do you know what? I'm not bad, actually. I'm a little bit tired because, get this. There's a documentary out this week on DVD and Blu-ray. It's called Crystal Lake Memories, right? It's a documentary about the history of the Friday the 13th film franchise.
Oh, okay.
Right. I know, obviously, you don't like horror films.
I'm scared already.
But yeah. This documentary...
It's going to reach for the cushion.
...is 6 hours.
6 hours?
6 hours. Just over 6 hours. So I have been watching this in 2-hour bursts, basically.
I thought you were just like a full day
job.
You
thought I was going to do the whole thing? No. Yeah. I mean, I've done it a couple of times with other bits, but no, I just couldn't do it. And the thing, because, I mean, I'm a fan of the Friday the 13th film franchise. I mean, we know there's some terrible ones and whatever else. So I was kind of, I was really interested to watch this documentary series. And I think if you are a fan of Friday the 13th, more than just the first one, okay, I'll say that, you're going to really dig this. It's actually quite interesting. It interviews like nearly all of the cast as well. That's the thing. Like all of the cast from all of the movies are in there talking, you know, Sean Cunningham's there and he's talking as well. And loads of people and whatever else. So I've been watching that and found out loads of actually interesting stuff. The most interesting bit I found, and I did not know this, was there was a Friday the 13th TV show.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine that on telly?
Well, the
weird thing... What time's
that on? Well...
Half past 3.
Well, do you know, it's funny you say that because it didn't feature Jason Voorhees. He wasn't in any of the episodes.
Oh.
So...
Oh, isn't he like the main guy?
Yes. Yeah, that's the thing. So that's what they were talking about in it. They were going, yes, it's nice, but, you know, it's not a Friday the 13th TV series. That's the thing, you know. So I was like, I didn't know this. This is kind of strange, the fact that you would have this show, but it's not about Camp Crystal Lake. It's not about Jason Voorhees. It's not about Mrs. Voorhees. It's like, that's weird. That's weird to me.
Strange. Is it like a prequel? Like Thursday the
12th? No, it's nothing. That's the thing. It was just a random, like, you know, Villain of the Week TV show that you get, you know, loads of them do it. It was just sort of Villain of the Week type show. That was it. I mean, it only lasted one series, but I was quite fascinated by that, I have to say. But the documentary is really good. As I said, Crystal Lake Memories, and it interviews all of them. It's quite interesting because it interviews the majority of people who played Jason Voorhees as well, which I thought was really good as well, because they give their own memories of what it was like working on those certain films. And then when they got dumped, what it was like to watch somebody else do it as well.
Someone else do the job.
Oh, I used to do that. Oh, but yeah, it's a good documentary. I was really into it. But as I said, 6 hours. 6 hours.
Yeah. Could they not have made this a sort of series with a couple of hours here?
I guess that's why I had to break it down into 2-hour chunks watching it, you know. And that's the beauty of obviously watching it on DVD and Blu-ray. You can stop it at a certain chapter and come back to it.
True. So you were thinking you're going to have a party one day and just do the whole weekend of Friday the 13th?
I don't think so. I don't. As I said, I'm a fan, but only of some of the films. I mean, I did watch them in order a few years ago, and it was a bit of a slog by the time it got to about 4. And then, you know, 8 I'm a fan of. And then when it went into space, I was like, okay, this is just bonkers. I don't think I could do it again. I've got to be honest.
I'd need a jacket with straps.
Do you know what? You would be perfectly fine after about number 3, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like learn to ride a bike or swimming. Just chuck me in at the deep end.
Jason Voorhees learns to swim. Yeah. No, I think you'd be fine. I think you'd be fine. I really do. But, you know, hey, you're not going to do it. So it's fine.
It's fine. I, yeah. not great with scary films.
No.
I'll let you do those.
I'll do those. I'll review them. And instead, you can watch the other stuff, which, you know, incidentally, one of the films we're going to review today, you've seen as well as I have. It's not scary.
I have.
But it is.
First time in a while.
But it is about a murder.
A murder. Oh, no, it's not one of those.
Yeah. But it is. We'll come to that in a moment, though, won't we? Shall we do the other one first?
All in good time.
Yes.
Yes, what you got for us?
So, in cinemas right now is The Lost City. It's about a reclusive romance novelist on a book tour with her cover model, who gets swept up in a kidnapping attempt that lands them both in a cutthroat jungle adventure.
Nice. Yes. Sounds realistic.
Yeah. It sounds perfectly normal. You know, it's funny you were saying about, obviously, Jewel in the Nile a minute ago, because this film, it clearly wants to be, you know, one of those action-adventure films that we had back in the 90s, back in the 80s. You remember those films? Obviously, Jewel in the Nile, Romance in the Stone, The Goonies, Big Trouble in Little China. You know, loads of them, wasn't
there? Someone who don't belong in the jungle.
Yes.
Ends up in the jungle.
But, you know, they were so popular, and they're still popular to this day. You know, I love watching Romance in the Stone. Jewel in the Nile's great as well. Indiana Jones as well, of course. You know, how can we forget that? Then something happened in the 90s. I think, you know, basically independent cinema and the return of sort of hardcore violence. The genre sort of fell out of favor, I feel. You know, nobody was really making action adventure movies for the whole family. Then there was sort of a bit of a revival over the past couple of years, I think mainly thanks to The Rock, let's be honest.
I was thinking he's been in all these sorts of ones.
He's done all of that. I mean, remember a year where he brought out like 7 films, and they were all action adventure movies, and you were like, how many more can he do? Yeah. So, you know, thanks to The Rock, action adventure movies are sort of back. As I said, sort of, I've not quite found its second wind yet. I mean, The Lost City doesn't really help its cause either, because it does seem to struggle with all of the adventure cliches that were so prominent in the 1980s and sort of early 90s movies as well. It is very much a case of, you've seen it all before, it's been done so much better before. However, that isn't to say that it's not an entertaining watch, because it is at times. I think that's mainly thanks to Sandra Bullock in the lead role as the reclusive romance writer. I thought she was really entertaining and was really excellent at all the running and jumping stuff as well. I know that sounds a bit pandering, but, you know, normally when you think of Sandra Bullock, she's sort of in a rom-com or, you know, something like that, a serious drama. So her doing some action.
It's like a while since she's done a good comedy role.
Yes.
A lot of running and jumping.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And talking about the comedy stuff, I think if the script had been a bit sharper and a bit wittier with her character, then I think we could have seen a rival to any of the male leads that we've had in the action adventure stakes recently as well. I mean, Sandra Bullock is very good at the sarcasm in this. I thought she was really good at it, but the basic dialogue is a bit underwhelming, it's got to be said. Then couple that with Channing Tatum's over-the-top sidekick, and I don't think that works too well at all. I mean, individually, they're fun characters, but together, it felt like one was trying to outdo the other at any given moment.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There are brief appearances from Brad Pitt. He's really, really funny in this. Really funny.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I hadn't realised until I saw the trailer just now. He's sort of come in the last trailer. He's turning up in this.
Yes.
He's got a good spot.
Daniel Radcliffe plays the evil mastermind behind it all, and he is evil, and he is also very funny in it as well, but I don't think either of them can save the film from being it's a bit of a lightweight action adventure flick that to me felt a little bit outdated. I mean, you know, the film has action and it has got adventure, but as I said, it all just feels a little bit old hat. You know, it hasn't been brought up to date enough. And I think, you know, going back to what we were saying about The Rock making all of these action adventure movies, at least he was trying to update it. You know, Jungle Cruise is a good example of a movie that is a classic action adventure movie, but is still brought up to date. And I don't think this one does it that well. So I think, you know, I think The Lost City sort of, I think it struggles under its own expectations more than anything else.
Mm. Still remained a little lost.
Yeah, kind of. Yes. Yeah.
Didn't quite strike El Dorado, but
no.
Sort of found.
It didn't. It didn't like find Shangri-La. Let's put it that way. Yes. Yes.
Oh, okay. Where's this out? Cinemas,
so this is in cinemas now. Yes. So just in cinemas.
Did it make you laugh? It looks like
it did. As I said, it did make me laugh. Sandra Bullock's really good. Brad Pitt is very good. Brad Pitt's probably worth the admission alone, to be honest. Daniel Radcliffe is really good in this as well. Nice, fun side to him in it as well. Yeah, I mean, you know, I laughed at the individual people. Maybe not Channing Tatum. I didn't find his character that funny. I'd laughed at the individual people, but the film as a whole, I didn't find it work that well, to be honest.
Oh. So you've got something else for us, which I suppose is another film that's kind of in an old school style.
It is. Yes. Well, it's a new version of an old movie. So Death on the Nile is now on DVD, Blu-ray, and also on Disney Plus. Obviously, it follows Hercule Poirot as he investigates the murder of a young heiress on a boat on the Nile. So we had Murder on the Orient Express, Kenneth Branagh's remake of that a few years ago, wasn't it?
Was it a few years ago?
Was it 2019? Like something like
not
that.
Not long ago, but I bet it was longer than it.
Yeah, it probably was. It probably was. I mean, that was a bit lifeless and a bit flat, I found.
I quite enjoyed it.
Is it okay?
Probably lost in the nostalgia of the old school.
No, that's mystery. Fine. That's fine. That's fine. But, you know, I found it a little bit lifeless, a little bit flat. This one is dead on arrival. It is. I mean, you've seen this as well. So I'm interested to know what you think in a minute. But I think this is one of the most boring films I've seen recently. Nothing happens. Like, there's three people who die. And there's this big murder investigation, but it's all very lackluster. I mean, it takes nearly an hour before Gal Gadot's Lynette Ridgway is mysteriously killed. The problem is that you either are meant to like or hate the character. And I just didn't feel anything for it. It's a really empty character who is meant to be one of the antagonists. So the film spends this ridiculous amount of time introducing us to this cast of characters and showing us all of their pros and cons. And this is meant to make, you know, keep you guessing as to who might have done the murders later on. All it did was elongate an already long opening third of the film. And then when the bodies start to pile up, for want of a better expression, the film kicks into gear, or it kind of does. It's just more Poirot sort of moving through the gears, working everything out, using his great detective skills. The problem is it's all really dull. And I don't think Kenneth Branagh feels like Hercule Poirot. That's the thing. I mean, he's trying his best, but this is a character that just doesn't fit his acting abilities, I think. I mean, where are you on this? Oh. Where are you?
Well, I think Kenneth's done a great job as Poirot. I liked him in this, but I felt the same. It took a long time to get going and get into it. And then when the way they were introducing some of the characters were like spoken about, and it was like, oh, he feels like this because you think, well, you're going to show us that. You've showed us everybody else. Yeah. We've spent about half an hour on the doctor, but then we've spent about 10 minutes on the maid.
Yes. And
it seemed a bit sort of cobbled together, really, until the main kind of thing happened. And then it all rushed towards the next bit, the next murder. I didn't think they really had the pace of it right.
It's weird for such an ensemble. You know, the first, obviously, Murder on the Orient Express had this huge ensemble. This one doesn't really have that huge ensemble. It's got a couple of big stars, and that's kind of it, really. Then you've got Jennifer Saunders, Dawn French, Russell Brand. And you're like, what? We're opposite Gal Gadot? How's this happening? You know, but each of them...
I quite liked that, though.
I guess so.
Surprising.
But each of them are seemingly playing a completely different character than the one they should be playing, I think. It's really messily cast, and I don't think that's the real kicker. The real kicker in this movie is the accents. They're just all over the place. Some of the worst accents are terrible. I mean, and I have no idea why a British actress is doing an American accent, or an American accent, American actress is doing a British accent, or a Scottish actress is doing a French accent, or a French actress is doing a British accent, and so on and so on. It boggles my mind that Kenneth Branagh thought it was a good idea to mix it up like that. His teeth clenchingly bad across the board, I thought.
I thought the first one, we saw more of Poirot, and we saw a little bit into his kind of life. We did a little bit in this one, but not enough. I think that would have been better.
But the bit that we saw about his life was the origin story of where the mustache came from.
Yeah, that felt too far, didn't it?
What?
Really?
It was like, where did this even come from? Here's the origin story of why he's got a mustache. We don't need to know that. It's pointless. It's ridiculous. I turned, you know, it's like in the Wolverine movie, I can't remember which one it is, where we get an origin story as to where he gets his jacket from. Why? It's not required. This is the thing. And also, I've got to say as well, is I said this about Murder on the Orient Express, I'm going to say it about Death on the Nile as well. It's heavily saturated in CGI. Heavily. Like, The immediate,
yeah, there is quite a lot, isn't it?
There is. The immediate sets, like the interior sets, okay, fine. But as soon as they go out on the boat, or if they get off the boat, everything's CGI. Everything. It's just, and the problem is, you can tell. That's the thing. It's not as though you go, oh, it looks bad as well. That's the thing. The whole film, to me, just looked and sounds terrible as well. To me, it's a real clunker. I mean, I don't know about you.
I thought it was okay.
Okay.
I just wonder whether somebody like Knives Out has kind of changed the game in all these sorts of films.
That's a good point. Has...
I feel like this may have been better if we hadn't seen Knives Out.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
So, Death on the Nile in the cinemas, Disney Plus. I'm confused.
DVD, Blu-ray and Disney Plus as well. All of the places.
All over the place, including in the Nile.
Yes. Well, that's where my copy is. Yes.
What else you got for us on the podcast, Mark?
So I thought we should talk about a film that was nominated at the Oscars, actually, for Best Foreign Language Film. Actually, it's called Flea. It's the story of Amin, who is on the verge of marriage, which compels him to reveal his hidden past for the first time. So this is all based on a true story. Amin Nawabi worked really closely with the director Jonas Poa Rasmussen to really ensure that every single detail was correct. And I have to say, there are moments in this film that I think, you know, if you're working that closely with a director, you could easily turn around and go, leave it out. It's too emotional for me. It's too harrowing. You know, I can't do it anymore, basically. But this is clearly a cathartic experience for Amin. And I have to say, it feels a bit like a cathartic experience for us watching it as well. Certainly by the end, I have to say. So the way that this is set up is Amin is filmed by his friend, who is also a psychologist. And he speaks about his life so far. I mean, it's great that we go back to the young Amin, because we get a sense of who this guy is, even from a very young age. We can see he loves his family, he loves being around his sisters. You know, the way the film paints these pictures, just a delight, you know, very family orientated. Then Amin starts to talk about his movements as he tries to escape Afghanistan and then Russia and finally ending up in Denmark. This is the most harrowing segment of the film because it details in great depth the experiences that Amin had to deal with every single step of the way, either with his family or on his own. And I'm not ashamed to say that a lot of it really got to me. And there was one moment where I did shed a tear because it's so heartbreaking. It really is. But I think that's the beauty of this film, is that it is honest. You know, Amin is so honest and forthright that you can't help but admire and even love his honesty during this entire period as well. You know, as I said, I don't think many people would be this honest about their story. They would have left some bits out, but he hasn't. That's the thing about it. And if you're thinking this is kind of, oh, it sounds like a documentary or something, it's not. It's actually animated. It's an animated feature film. Got to say, the animation is brilliant. Striking, I think, is the way to describe it. You know, it's not... it's not standout animation. You know, it's not animation that's very different or anything else like that. Instead, it's animation that I think perfectly fits the story in that it's beautifully done. It looks wonderful, but it's not taking anything away from the storyline itself. So it's an animation style that complements the actual story itself.
It's a clever idea to animate something like this.
It is.
Rather than just video someone telling a story.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's, you know, it goes hand in hand with something like The Breadwinner, I guess, which, you know, was animated, but that was a true story as well. I think it just gives a bit more, I think it just gives a bit more energy to it as well, or a bit more, as I said, different. It's very different in the way that they've done it. I like that about it. And I think, you know, this is a movie that will shock you, will scare you, will comfort you, all in equal measure. You know, it feels like you've been on a men's journey yourself as well. This is why I'm saying, you know, it's like it's a cathartic experience for yourself, even watching it as well. So, you know, this is a film that really talks about overcoming some of life's biggest obstacles, obstacles that you and I would never even have to even bear thinking about. But they
kind of strikes a chord at the moment as well.
It really does. Yeah. Yeah, it absolutely does. You know, this is, a man who is ultimately, you know, fleeing war-torn Afghanistan, and then he goes to Russia, and Russia is saying, you can't stay here, but we're not going to give you any help in going anywhere else. And on top of that, he's doing this himself because his family are elsewhere. That's even more difficult because he's such a family person as well. He loves his mom, loves his sisters as well. And you just sit there going, how is he even going to do any of this? You know, how's this possible? And I think that's the thing is that, as I said, you know, it's heartbreaking and yet at the same time kind of heartwarming as well. You know, it really is an outstanding piece of work. It really is.
Is it a difficult watch, the subject matter?
Is it a difficult watch?
Important watch?
Important watch, yes. Difficult watch, yes. Obviously added emphasis on obviously what's happening in Ukraine at the moment as well, because the message is still the same. That's the thing. You know?
Yeah.
But great film. Great film. Absolutely fantastic film. Really, really good.
So Flea, nothing to do with Fleabag then.
No.
I was well off last week.
You were well off last week, yes.
Doubly.
Yes.
So where can people find this?
So this is on DVD and Blu-ray. I think it's also streaming on Curzon Home Cinema as well. I'm pretty sure it is. It's still on there. So yes. Yes. Well worth seeking out. Well worth seeking out.
Cool. What you got for us next week, Mark?
Next week, we've got a new Nicolas Cage film.
Oh, he's back. Is he bringing a pig or?
No, he's bringing himself. Nicolas Cage plays Nicolas Cage in The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. Exactly. Okay. Exactly. Yes. Awesome. And then on DVD and Blu-ray, we're going to be talking about a documentary called Cow. Can you guess what it's about?
Oh, it's a spin-off from Babe, Pig in the City, I reckon.
You're close. You're pretty close. You're pretty close, yes. And then for a podcast extra, we're going to talk about a documentary called Ennio, which is a documentary about the iconic maestro Ennio Morricone.
Oh, you're a big fan.
I am a big fan. I am a big, big fan. I am, absolutely. I mean, who cannot be, you know? The man's done such great work.
Agreed. Cool. Excellent. I look forward to discussing all of that in great detail. The good, the bad, and the ugly of it next week.
Yes, it will be. It absolutely will be. I'll speak to you next week.
Film reviews and movie news with Stuart Pink and Mark Searby.
Thanks for listening to Film Reviews and Movie News. We've been doing this little podcast for years now. Mark has watched and expertly reviewed hundreds of films, and I've made hundreds of terrible jokes. They're all available to listen to again if you subscribe to the Film Reviews and Movie News podcast. It's freely available wherever you get your podcasts from, or you can find all the latest episodes and everything else I do online at stuartpink.com.